continue with the conversation. Now, my next guest has been here many times before. Dr. Carol Swain, an award-winning political scientist, former professor of political science, and professor of law at Vanderbilt University, a lifetime member of the James Madison Society. Doctor, welcome back.
Hey, it's my pleasure.
Always good to have you here. You know, and I'm glad you're here because this topic is driving me up a wall. We went from Russia to racist. And Donald Trump's a racist. And in fact, anybody that voted for him is a racist. And that wasn't good enough. So then it became white nationalist. And now Donald Trump is a white supremacist, apparently, which is baffling considering there are almost none of those people in this country. According to the Southern Poverty Law Center, a greatly discredited organization that would accuse a company of being racist that makes chicken sandwiches because they're Christian. So that's how far they'll go. They can't even find 15,000 of these clowns in America. But these accusations, doctor, are flying everywhere. You say it's reckless. I agree. You say it's dangerous and divides America deeper. Start right there.
Well, let me tell you exactly what they have done. They have redefined white supremacists and white supremacy to refer to the fact that economically, white people in America have more wealth. They are positioned, in high positions in many institutions, and they have taken the fact that, you know, that whites are in the upper echelon more than racial and ethnic minorities, and they have redefined that fact to be white supremacy. And it used to mean whites that believed that minorities were inferior intellectually, physically. And so that's what they are doing. And so when Joe Biden says that America is full of white supremacy, whites, you know, that they created it, he will not have it in his administration. He's saying that white people that are advantaged because of their education or their wealth, that they don't deserve that.
Well, it's baffling to me that those that would fight racism, which is, I think, most Americans, would find some of them on the side of saying, well, anybody that's white is by nature racist. You know, ashamed.
I mean, that's what white people saying, and it's for political advantage. But, yes, they're saying that if you have done well in America, if you are advantaged and you happen to have white skin, you're a white supremacist, because you're in a better position than a lot of other people in America.
But then you come along, and you're problematic for the narrative and folks that are like you. I don't know if there's anybody quite like you, Doctor. But you know what I'm saying. Here's an accomplished...
Like me, that have overcome poverty and have worked hard. And,
right.
You know, and by that definition, I guess we would be black supremacists because some of us have done really well in America, and some of us have done better than some whites.
Yeah, you're a black supremacist because you went raised in Virginia, if memory serves, in a big family, not a lot of money, worked hard, accomplished things.
Dropout teen mom.
Yeah, and you made something of yourself. But isn't that what America's supposed to be? Opportunity to make something. It doesn't mean that everybody gets the same prize at the end. You know, when I was a kid, I'd see some guy drive by in a big fancy car. I didn't think to myself, well, he must be evil and dirty and rotten because he has a nice car. I thought to myself, gosh, I'm going to have to work awfully hard and do something good to get a car like that, or whatever it might be. Maybe it's a house, a car, a boat, whatever my idea of success was. You know, I didn't think about, well, that person must have cheated, lied, and done something wrong to get there. I thought, man, they must have worked hard and done something good. When do we turn successful people?
Because, you know, a few weeks ago, I came in number 3 in the Nashville mayoral race. The guy that knocked me out of the number 2 position put $1.5 million into the race. He's the son of a former 3-term governor. And I could have been really angry about the fact that he happened to be born into a family of privilege, but actually didn't get upset about that. I said, this is how money is in American politics, and I may very well vote for that guy. I'm not angry because he happened to be economically situated better than me. I didn't have $1 million to put into my campaign. In fact, I didn't invest. I invested my time, my effort, and my intellect into my campaign. I did not invest what money I had.
And I understand that, but then you look at the Georgia race for governor, for example, and the outcome, the Republican wins, and Stacey Abrams loses, still refuses to say that she lost the race fairly, accuses those on the other side of rigging the race and its racism. I think she has done a tremendous disservice to the people of Georgia and to people across the country by just refusing to concede that she actually lost that race.
It's part of the political strategy, because if you can label Republicans and whites as racist and you keep that narrative going, it's just a strategy that they use that's very destructive for our society. And for white people, they need to understand what is taking place. And I think I explained it, you know, that what is taking place is the advantages that people have accumulated because they happen to be born into families where there was more money, maybe generational wealth, or they worked really hard and they've been successful. If you are white, under the Democrats' definition, you are a white supremacist because you have more than some economic and some more ethnic and racial groups. You have more than the ethnic and racial groups on average, so that makes you a white supremacist because you're above.
You know, and then when do we start, you know, and it's true of not just whites, but in general, you know, if you make too much money, if you're a one percenter, somehow you became evil. When did we start demonizing success in America, whether it's white people or whomever?
I don't know. And the people that heard that often are people that have benefited extremely well. They're in the top 1% to 2% of wealth in America, and they're the ones that are more likely to throw out, you know, those kinds of epithets. But if you look at the Democratic Party, it's all about political advantage. And they call themselves progressives, but I can tell you that here in Nashville, which is run by Democrats, the leaders have cut deals that benefited their friends by privatizing. And at one time, privatizing was something that you did when there were things the private industry could do better than government.
Which is pretty much everything.
Democrats cut are the opposite.
Yeah. Private industry can do things better than government pretty much everywhere on most all topics, except maybe building big machines that kill other people and break other big machines. The government's good at that.
No, but sometimes the deals that are cut are deals with companies that are going to charge the people far more than they would have paid if the government had done it themselves. And so these are private these are deals that benefit private individuals,
sure,
not the cities and towns.
No.
And, you know, that's the kind of politics that's coming from progressives. They are benefiting each other, that top echelon, the ones that call themselves progressives.
Yeah. Dr. Carol Swain, never enough. I could talk to you for 5 hours, I think. It's just never enough. Award-winning political scientist, professor at law at Vanderbilt and elsewhere, part of Project 21. It's always my privilege to have you on the program.
Okay, well, go to my website, Be the People News, have a podcast, and I write blogs there periodically.
And thank you so much. We'll talk soon.
The Michigan Chamber of Commerce, celebrating 60 years of being the leading voice for business.
I'm Jim Holcomb, Executive Vice President of the Michigan Chamber of Commerce. A crucial role of the Michigan Chamber is to listen to our members, gain an understanding of their business challenges, and provide real solutions to help them succeed. For the past 60 years, the Michigan Chamber has delivered powerful advocacy and business solutions on behalf of our 6,000 members who represent over 1 million employees across the state. As a member-driven organization, we keep our members at the center of all we do. We are proud to be the leading voice of business in Michigan. And together, we can make a difference to ensure Michigan is the best place to create jobs and support free enterprise.
Join the Michigan Chamber of Commerce today at michamber.com. The Michigan Chamber of Commerce, the leading voice for business, moving Michigan forward.
When I was little, I didn't talk for a long time. I liked things to always be the same. Anything new or different would scare and upset me. I was very sensitive to lights and sounds. It was almost like I had bigger eyes and ears than everyone else. So I built secret hiding places where nothing could get in. I didn't like looking people in the eye. It made me feel uncomfortable. I'd throw big tantrums over little things like when my socks didn't match. Sometimes I'd do the same things over and over. Until one day, I found out I had autism. My family got me help. Slowly, I learned how to live with it better.
You can see signs of autism in children as young as 18 months. Early intervention can make a lifetime of difference. Learn the signs at autismspeaks.org/signs. Brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council.
You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. There are thousands of teens in foster care who would love to put up with you. Call 1-888-200-4005 or visit AdoptUsKids.org for more information. A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.